Major Littleton, Reel 4. You were saying you found a track from Mersimer True back to towards the Delta, but
well, in,
you
yes,
about whether you know there were patches of soft going.
Yes,
well,
that's right. We did indeed, and I said I had a recollection of having to dig vehicles out, but not a great deal. I think that's where we got to, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were mentioning using sand troughs, I think, for extracting
vehicles. Yes. Yes. Those are sort of metal sheets with about the width of a tire of a wheel with holes in them, and you put those down, and of course the wheel would grip.
You provide a purchase for it.
Yes. Mm. That's all they were. Sorry, where have we got? Are we running?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Did you have any contacts with the enemy on the way back to Mersimer True and beyond?
Yes. Not only in terms of shelling, artillery, and so on. Not anything like immediate hand-to-hand or anything close contact. But we were constantly shelled because they knew exactly where we were. And they had plenty of space behind them to bring up artillery and so on.
Did that shelling do you any damage? What did you...
Casualties, if I remember rightly, in the retreating part from Matru back to the Delta were relatively light. Mm.
Did you lose
relatively
vehicles
light.
As a result?
Well, one always loses vehicles, and they burn up, and they're more trouble when they're alight for showing where what's happening and where you are than when they're if they're just knocked out. But yes, we will have lost vehicles because by the time we got to the Delta, our equipment was pretty well non-existent.
What happened to you when you got to the Alamein Line? Was there anything particular happened when you got that far back?
Not really, because the Alamein Line was really the extent of which their German lines of communication, they were really extended by then. They needed to pause as well as us. And the Alamein Line, because of its, you know, its limited area with the Katara Depression at one end and the sea at the other, was a first-class defensive position. It had been created as a defensive position before the last German offensive took place. So it was bound to be a place of pause.
Did you go into the line and occupy positions?
At that stage, no. We were centred somewhere near Alexandria. I can't quite remember exactly where we were, but we had to stop, we had to reorganize and start afresh. We had very little transport that was worth having, and the whole division really had to be relieved and be given a chance.
As I was about to say, you've been retreating for some time, and presumably you would have lost equipment besides transport on the way back.
Indeed, I lost all my equipment when the Ghazala breakout took place and I had to change vehicles. It all went.
Separated from your baggage.
Yes. The Germans got my Leica camera back, which was very serious.
Very serious indeed. So there you were with what you stood up in.
More or less, yes. Yeah.
This area near Alexandria, how long did it take you to get the battalion reconstituted back into a reasonable condition, do you think, after that?
I really can't remember. It can't have been all that long, because it wasn't very long, surely, before we had, when Monty arrived, and we had to fight the defensive battle. What was it called? Alam Halfa or... Ruizat or
Ridge.
That's right. We had to fight that defensive battle. And everybody was to some extent involved in that. We weren't heavily involved in that because we were south of the line in which the main attack took place.
I was going to ask you, what was happening to you during that time when you were, I think 50th Division was right in the southern end of the Alamein.
It was indeed. Yeah. It was given some tasks to do, particularly... There was, at one stage, there was an attack. I've forgotten where it was. but it was quite impossible. We did it and we had a go, and it was quite impossible to take the objectives, and we were pulled back, and that was it. But I've forgotten the details of it, but it wasn't a major battle. I think it was to gain height where we could be able to see what was happening better.
So you're trying to get...
We were trying to get decent observation, more than anything else, rather than gain territory. Because we weren't after gaining territory at that time, but we must know what defensive positions were possible.
Were you still adjutant at that stage in the battalion?
Ah, now then, I...
At some stage you went off to brigade, didn't you?
Well, Ted Cook Collis got command of the brigade at the end of the retreat, I think. I'm not sure of the exact date, but it was before Alamein. So, and he apparently he asked for me to go as his staff captain. And so, roughly speaking, I suppose from September 42, I became his staff captain.
Was this
roughly
before or after that attack you mentioned? That was from the southern end of the
I can't remember.
You weren't
I as distinct from one's being an adjutant, where you were still well up. Once you became staff captain of a brigade, usually, if there was anything happening, had a forward headquarters and a rear headquarters. And that's why, you know, from that moment I ceased to be really a fighting soldier in that sense, because I was always stuck at brigade rear headquarters, even if it was only half a mile behind what was happening. You had your office lorry, office van with a canopy thing that would allow you to come, you know, work out half outside it. And it was essentially even more of an administrative position, as you well know. Compared with even an adjutant. So I can't really remember, because I wasn't involved at close quarters.
What was in your office truck then? What kind of truck was it? Was it a box-bodied truck?
I think, yes, box-bodied. And it was either that, or it was a staff car with an extension at the side, a canvas-type extension.
Like a penthouse.
Like a penthouse, yeah. where you could have a table and you could work, mm. and you could write, or you would have, I think you would have NCO assistants who could type a letter, or a soldier, or people who could type letters. Yeah. I must have had, because I couldn't bloody well type at that stage.
So you had a sort of secretariat.
I must have, yes.
Mm. What were your
but very limited, obviously. Look, yes. They don't, brigade headquarters, you don't have a lot of bureaucracy behind you.
I was going to ask you, who else would be in the rear HQ besides you as the staff captain?
I can't remember exactly. Signals would be up forward. Most of other people, brigade major, you see, would certainly be up forward.
What was what were you doing, and what were the duties of the staff captain?
Literally, any administrative task which needed doing, from dealing with because you didn't have a quartermaster in that sense, so you would have to deal with division often on behalf of your commanding, your brigadier. You would have to deal division, you would have to be requesting things, you would have to be receiving things. You were administering in the fullest sense of the word. And you became what is now called human resources, which you and I know as a personnel officer, with manpower and replacements and casualty lists and all that sort of stuff.
So it's dealing with the personnel, so you're logging in casualty reports, requesting reinforcements.
I would think, yes.
Other things important, rations and water?
Yes.
Would that be a daily thing that you would report ration strength and request?
You would certainly be reporting personnel strength of all types,
yeah.
because all that sort of stuff had to go upwards.
Mm. Were you requesting ammunition? Was that another?
Can't remember. Mm. I would have thought through transport that maybe that was an RASC function. I can't remember in detail, but remember at brigade you would have certain divisional levels like transport and so on. You'd have representatives down at brigade level.
So you'd have an RASC officer, presumably.
I imagine so, yes.
Who were you dealing with when you were dealing with division then? Presumably you had a direct line to divisional headquarters.
DAAGs, chiefly. DAAGs, DAQMGs.
How did you deal with them? Was it mainly by signal or
if possible, by telephone, because a brigade headquarters and divisional headquarters, there had to be decent links by landline, as well as radio trucks and things, not little 18 sets, but proper radio trucks, and a signal officer based there, both at rear and certainly advanced headquarters, of course, tactical headquarters.
Did those radios work well, the truck-borne radios?
Oh, they were much better. They were proper radios. They were built into the truck.
So you could actually get through, usually?
You could usually get through, but as I remember, landline communications, maybe you could ring up brigade, ring up division and would speak to DAAG or whoever. Mm. We had two, there was Ayrton and Turton.
Ayrton
and Turton.
And who was that? It sounds like a firm.
One was DAAG and the other was DAQMG at that sort. Mm. Major Turton was an MP, serving as an active private soldier, as an active officer. But he was an MP for quite a long time. He was with 50 Div for quite a while.
Who did
they were both nice.
Who would be in the Ford headquarters? Who would the brigadier take with him when he went off?
Brigade major, of course, and everybody else that was meant to function.
Mm. But I mean, who would that consist of? Himself, his brigade major?
Brigade major. He must have had signal officers. Mm. He would have had a representative of transport and so on. Mm. He probably, and remember, a brigade will have, apart from three battalions, it's got guns, so he'd have an artilleryman there. He'd have a whole gamut of supporting arms.
And they would all go forward.
And they would be forward with him, because they must be in immediate contact. If he wants firepower, then they've got to provide it bloody quick.
Were you in constant touch with Ford headquarters?
Usually by landline. Yes, as I remember. If battles were in progress, I mean like particular operations or Alamein or whenever, then of course brigade would constantly be asking for information or wanting something sent up or obtained and so on. So you're in close contact with forward headquarters. But I was stuck often as much as 2 miles behind them.
Did you feel that you'd have preferred to be forward, or were you happy to be back?
It's a mixed feeling. Look, it's an easier life stuck in rear brigade headquarters, let's be frank about it. But the excitement when operations are on and being involved, I enjoyed more, even as an adjutant, than of a battalion than as a staff captain of a brigade. But it's a mixed bag in a way. It's nice to be safe, but it's you feel a bit out of it sometimes.
Do you think then that the excitement was a reasonable compensation for the danger and the discomfort of being forward?
Oh, yes. Definitely. But and remember, even when you reach that sort of level, even forward tactical headquarters, you're not living in a slit trench and firing a machine gun. So the balance is, it's fun being up there. I mean, fun is a wrong word to use, but you know what I mean.
More interesting.
Yeah, to put the least of it. Mm. You weren't feeling left out.
Do you know why the colonel had chosen you to be his staff captain? Was it simply that he knew you could do the paperwork and... Was that the reason?
I don't know why he did choose me, but he did. And there is, amongst the letters, there is a quote from me, to her, much later on than this, a quote from me in a letter home, when I had left the division, and was I within, either I was at Staff College, I think, where I had a letter from Ted Cook Collis saying, you were a bloody awful signal officer, but you were a damn good staff captain. And I was so thrilled, as is nobody's business. And he did try and get me back again, but thank God he failed, otherwise I'd be dead. Oh. Well, if I'd gone back to England, with the, he was back in the in UK by then, and as I, 50th Division had a pretty tough time in after D-Day.
They did have to fight hard in Normandy, yes.
Yes. Mm. So anything could have happened. Mm. Well, I was tucked in at American Rear Army headquarters.
Did Colonel Cook, Brigadier Cook Collis, did he survive Normandy?
Yes, I think so. I have no recollection of him. He died, as far as I know, he died in his bed.
Now, but another thing you mentioned... Sorry.
Yes, go on. No, no.
You mentioned the arrival of General Montgomery.
Yes.
Yes. Do you have any particular memories of that?
Only that we didn't know the politics of it, obviously. And Auchinleck was, you know, well regarded. He was a fine soldier, no question. But somehow the atmosphere changed. Montgomery's PR was so good. This business of coming down to low levels and talking to troops all over the place, time and again, soapbox stuff, really had an effect. Particularly before Alamein, when we had the defensive battle to fight. In fact, we were all quite upset because he took all our transport away from us, and in the desert we're used to having it and being able to run. So we had to stand and stay put. But it did have quite an extraordinary effect, because he hadn't even established himself as a major commander by that stage.
Did he come round to the 69th Brigade? Did you see him?
I did. I can't tell you the detail or the occasion. I have a sort of recollection of being at one of his sessions with junior officers or officers at that level, you know, below the rank of COs, when he talked to a whole group of us at one stage. But I've no recollection of the detail. But there's no doubt he certainly impressed the troops, because it was the troops he talked to.
I mean, did this have a visible effect then on the troops you were dealing with?
I reckon so. Mm. I reckon the morale went up, and it went up noticeably. Mm. And it needed to, because remember, by the time we'd hit the Delta, everybody was, you know, said this is no go, and next thing you'll be in Egypt.
Mm. Do you remember where your rear headquarters were actually located? 69 Brigade, where HQ was it?
Well, before Alamein.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
You were somewhere on the southern.
That's all I recollect. Yes, it was desert conditions. Mm. I suppose 50 Div always felt a little aggrieved that the 51st Highland Division suddenly came into the desert and got all the accolades and had the coast road and what have you, whereas we, who had done all this bloody battle and back to the Delta, were down on the south flank.
Yep, I mean, they had the glamour and the glory.
They had, that's right, as you can imagine. That was a sort of morale factor.
Were you stuck in your headquarters all the time, or were you able to get out and go forward at all?
No, I don't recall going forward before Alamein took place. At any great stage.
What happened then? What were you doing? What do you remember about the Battle of Alamein, the offensive?
Awfully little, because we were very much a holding situation, or trying to divert troops so far as it was possible, German troops down south, by threatening noises and so on. But I was stuck well behind. We didn't have any major 69th Brigade didn't have an awful lot to do during that offensive until it was over and the advance started. And I remember stuck in a wadi somewhere with my trucks and few people one way and another, while forward positions were being held rather than advanced from or attacked. So really the actual Alamein battle was not one of my battles, if you like.
What happened then when the pursuit began?
Oh, that became very exciting in a way, because once the minefields were cleared and we were opened into open country, it moved very fast. The Germans pulled themselves well back. The Italians were taken prisoner in vast quantities.
Do you remember seeing?
For years, I took a beautiful little Beretta pistol from an Italian. I think he was a general of some sort. He was a very senior officer, which we captured and what have you. I know I disarmed him by taking his pistol. I kept the thing for years. There's a little Beretta with a pearl handle. Oh, beautiful machine. I handed it in the end.
What, do you remember him saying anything to you when you were taking his...
No, I don't think so. He was only too pleased to be out of it, like most of the Italians were.
Do you remember having any conversation with any of them? When they were
not really. My Italian wasn't up to it.
Well, maybe they had some English, some of them.
Well, yes, they would have done, but I was a busy fellow. As a staff captain, you had to call these prisoners. They'd got to be moved. Mm. You've got to have transport to move them. You've got to get them back to a PW cage somewhere. This is a very busy... It's a busier time when that advance started than I've ever had.
What impression did you have of their physical condition? Did they seem to be in...
Poor. This is where the jaundice business was. An awful lot. I think it was dirt in their fixed trenches or something, or the bug had got in and spread around.
Amongst the Italians?
Amongst the Italians. And the British Army, a lot of people, I mean, jaundice that I got was not just an occasional bloke. It was lots and lots of soldiers passing over the areas where the jaundice was still alive, obviously, or the prisoners that they took.
About an epidemic?
Yeah, I would say yes. As I remember, I would say yes. It really did harm to our numbers.
The Italians were not motivated, and they were sick.
They were not motivated. They were only too pleased to pack it up. Mm. They were never a problem.
When you were having to get them transported back, were you also responsible for getting food and water for them?
No, very quickly they got out of brigade's hand.
Yeah.
All you wanted to do was get rid of them back to divisional headquarters or army headquarters or whoever whose job it was to look after them.
Get them back as quick as possible.
Because our instructions at that time were to move forward and fast. Mm. The Germans were on the run. We were there to see they didn't stop and regroup at that stage.
How did things go? Did you manage to keep the supplies of food and water and so forth going forward sufficiently quickly to sustain?
I think we did well. So far as I recollect, we did well. We would be initially on pretty tight rations, no comfortable, but one's cooks and what have you were pretty well trained, very good.
I mean, did you get, normally, when you were in the line earlier on, were you able to get fresh rations or locally purchased things, supplement the...
Well, no, very little of.
Very little.
I must say, when I was at brigade, we had, we fed very well. We had an excellent NCO cook who was completely impervious to shot and shell and managed to produce excellent food without the slightest trouble. He was also a homosexual transvestite, and you should see him when he was dressed up to go on leave to Alex. he was in his element.
Was he?
Yes. Mm. And Cook Collis accepted him just like that, because he was a damn good cook. He kept us well fed.
Do you know, had he been a cook in civil life before?
No, I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
And did you have a sort of headquarters mess, brigade headquarters mess?
I think, well, if we were reasonably static, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. And you did have the all-arms people were there. Operations started, you were all doing your own jobs, and you fed with everybody else, and you fed with the men, and that was it.
When you were going forward on the pursuit, was this division between forward headquarters and rear headquarters maintained, or was the headquarters travelling assembled together as one body?
I really can't remember. Remember, it was only a week or fortnight after the breakthrough took place that I disappeared with jaundice for a couple of months. So my memory after that of what happened after the preliminary stages of the advance are non-existent, because I just weren't there.
You weren't there. Do you have any idea of what sort of speed you were going at when you were driving up behind the...
Initially we were making some considerable kilometres per day in transport, because there was no opposition. So you were conditioned in those early stages by the rate at which supplies could catch you up.
And you know, were they able to keep up with your rate of movement?
On the whole, yes.
So you were just driving as fast as you could?
You were just driving and covering the ground and making certain that the ground was cleared, picking up anything or reporting anything. You came across minefields, you came across this, that and the other that had to be reported, but you were making progress, I think, in that sort of speeds. But for how long, I can't tell you, because I then have to leave.
How did the jaundice come on then? I mean,
I just felt bloody ill.
You felt bloody ill?
Oh, yes, it's a nasty condition.
And so what happened to
you? Put me off being a blood donor for life, because it's antibodies.
Yes, you started feeling ill.
Yeah.
And then
I was really ill, yes. They evacuated. I mean, you know, fortunately, they had some aeroplanes handy, and I was in a position. I don't know whether it was Cook College or somebody said, I want this man out. I don't know. All I know is I went... lifted out to Palestine.
Mm. Now, you've got a note here that says jaundice on alcohol for weeks. Now what?
Typing
alcohol for weeks.
It should say no, not on. I'm sorry, typing error.
That's a typo, is it?
Yes, indeed it is.
A very significant typo.
A very serious one. I'm sorry about that. We'll correct it. No, the point about jaundice is that one of the penalties is when you got over it, you still have to be... alcohol is apparently very serious if you've got drunk or something.
Is that... does that mean that...
Purely incidental.
Before the jaundice, you had access to drink, you could get...
Well, you got whatever was going. Officers always got a bottle of whiskey a month. Soldiers got... Ordinary troops got beer whenever it could be sent up. And the problem with the beer was when it had bounced in a truck 50 miles up the desert or something in temperatures of 30 degrees C, and you open that little can, most of it went skywards.
Immediately.
And if you got a third of the can of beer out of a can, you were lucky.
How long did your bottle of whiskey last you normally? Were you able to eke it out to the end of the month?
No, it didn't really.
It went...
I have a better story about bottles of whiskey. When I still got them, and I was with the American Fifth Army, because the Americans were still thinking of the tragedy of Prohibition days, and you would...